Mr. Chairman, on Friday, I've read the bills, and I have no desire to ask any questions.
Okay. West Virginia House of Delegates Standing Committee on Finance will come to order. The clerk will take a silent roll to determine if there is a quorum. There is a quorum. First order of business, approval of the minutes. Gentleman from the 72nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to approve the minutes from the previous meeting.
Gentleman from the 72nd moves to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. All those in favor signify saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed like sign. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Now before the committee is House Bill 5453. Gentleman from the 72nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I ask unanimous consent to suspend House Rule 83B, requiring that House Bill 5453 have a hearing and that House Bill 5453 be immediately taken up for markup and discussion.
Gentleman from the 72nd asks for unanimous consent that House Rule 84B requiring
83B.
Requiring House Bill 5453 for a hearing to be suspended and that it be taken up for immediate consideration or markup and discussion. Is there objection? Objection. Yes, sir.
Didn't we already have a public hearing
on this bill?
I thought we did.
Did we?
That's what I thought.
Either way, we've done suspended the rules.
I thought we did.
Okay.
Not on the comm sub. I can move the committee substitute.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Gentleman would like to withdraw his unanimous consent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I draw my request for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the objection or the unanimous consent is withdrawn. Now before the committee is House Bill 5453. Counsel, explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill comes in the form of a committee substitute from the Education Committee. The bill would create a new section of code to provide a new process for funding primary, secondary education in this state, as including public charter schools. This would all become effective 3 years from now. To begin with, for public school districts, beginning in the school year 29-30, and thereafter, public schools will be funded as follows. And I might preface that by saying nothing changes in the current law until then. First, each county board will receive funding for the school year equal to $6,100 per enrolled students. However, county boards that have less than $1,200 pupils enrolled will receive $6,100 per 1,200 pupils. And you'll hear the term base funding. That's what is referred to if people speak of base funding. Additional funding is provided through the creation of a special revenue account. And from that account, the Department of Education shall first fund special needs students in the counties at the rate of $3,050 per Tier 2 special needs students and $6,100 per Tier 3 special needs students. Those are in addition to the base funding. Number three, the department at its discretion from this new special revenue fund called the Supplemental Fund, I believe it's called the Supplemental School Aid Fund. After the special needs students are taken care of, the department may at its discretion distribute additional money to school districts for four specific purposes: transportation, vocational and technical education centers, alternative learning centers, and pilot programs. That completes the explanation of the bill with respect to primary and secondary schools in the public school system. Charter schools are funded beginning the same day, the same school year, at the amount of $8,600 per student, but they are not subject to the $1,200 minimum level. The Department of Education must report on all of these distributions to the to LOSEA at least once annually, and the legislature reserves the right to restrict funds to school districts that engage in maladministration, as that term is defined in the bill. There is a committee substitute for a committee substitute.
Gentleman from the 72nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee substitute.
Gentlemen, the council will explain.
The committee substitute for the committee substitute for House Bill 5453.
Council will explain the committee substitute for the committee substitute for House Bill 5453.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This committee substitute incorporates all of the provisions of the committee substitute for House Bill 5453 with some clerical and grammatical changes. Those are the only changes, no substantive changes.
Gentleman from the 87th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The chart that we were passed out, I think it was Tuesday when we had this bill, it showed what the changes were. My county is one that lost money. Is that chart still accurate with the comm sub that we have? Or would that have changed, or do I need to ask somebody else?
I'd have to defer.
Yeah, gentleman from the 38th may be able to enlighten you. Will the gentleman yield?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The chart that I gave you was at a base of $6,500 per pupil, and that was estimating what it would be at that point. This formula would keep the current school aid formula intact for 3 years.
What happens in 3 years?
In 3 years, then it goes to $6,100 per pupil. It gives them time to adjust their staffing or whatever they have to do to fit within the means there. But that $6,100 would keep the budget at the same level that we are at this point. So it was an increase.
For the 3 years.
Yeah, for the 3 years. But the $6,100 per pupil average would be the same amount in the base budget that we are going to be seeing over the next 3 years.
Okay.
Now, that number can change depending on conditions within the state if we want to modify that.
So, but as it stands right now, that number on the chart would be accurate 3 years from now.
Well, the chart I gave you was 6,500.
Okay.
This would put 61.
So it's even less.
Which is right, but but that also had a $214 million increase in the budget at 6,500 per pupil. That's why we're starting at this level to keep it.
What I'm trying to figure out is my county's still going to lose money. It sounds like.
Well, if they. It could, based on if you keep the same formula going forward, but we're trying to make it simpler and easier to predict, and that's why we're giving them that 3 years to get things in order to say, okay, if we have to do modifications in our schedules as far as how we hire or who we have, because some counties have more people in their county than they're supposed to have on the formula. So, we're trying to give them a time to look at and say, okay, this is where we're going, this is what we...
Yeah, my county's got about 70 over the formula right now.
All right.
Thank you.
That'll be one factor there.
Gentleman from the 80th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would the gentleman answer one more question?
Continue. Yes, sir.
I appreciate it. So looking at the, you have 6,100 per enrolled student, and then for the charter schools, there's 8,600. Is there money that public schools get that charters aren't eligible for? Is that why that's there?
Yes, and Uriah could possibly answer that better if we're at that point later on. They're already getting about 8,000 a student presently under the current formula, and that's making up for you have local share that's involved, and then the schools also get federal monies, things like that. So that's where I think it was 5G, 18-5G, had it in the code. So this references that portion in the code, but they're getting a roughly 8,000 now. But if we go to the 6,100 at that level, that would put them up around 8,600. That's what that number was used for.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And, yeah, if there is someone else here at the appropriate
yes,
time.
We'll do that. Gentleman from 37th.
Thank you for my friend. Am I mistaken, or is it not taken into consideration the pay raise? But I thought we were about 6,700 currently per student.
Right.
Are you telling me the teacher pay raise
in the current
out of this house makes up that extra
formula? Our current formula that's going to be used this year and the next couple years, if you use the current state aid formula, takes into account the pay raise. That's what we have budgeted.
Okay, so the 57 plus the pay raise.
Right, and that's why that comes roughly to 6,100, and that's why we went with the 6,100.
$15 million extra for special needs is on top of that.
Yes, but that would be after the third year, unless we want to appropriate at different times in the near term.
3 years out. So
3 years out. After 3 years, then that would go in.
Differential dollar-wise between where the school aid formula would be today and what is proposed here is how much?
That's the same. It would be the same. That's where we had the $6,100 per student.
So it is the same?
Roughly the same, yes.
All right. Then the question begs itself, why we change it?
Well, we're trying to make the formula simpler to figure out so you can calculate it based on a per pupil basis instead of having a formula that was...
The plan is to sort of freeze the number in place and develop a more legitimate formula?
Yes, that would be it, because the current formula has a wide range per pupil.
And then based on the counties. 3 years, we would have an extra $15 million that's committed...
For the special needs, yes. Right. And that supplemental
fund. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Any other questions? The gentleman from the 38th. Gentleman from the 11th.
Gentleman, continue to yield. As I read this, just confirming that the public charter schools, the students there will get $8,600 per student.
Based on the numbers that we're doing now, what they're getting already is about $8,000 per student. And at that time, when we go to $6,100 per student average, they would be getting an equivalent of $8,600 at that time.
And they are also eligible for the Tier 2 and Tier 3?
Yes, but the way we have it in this bill, they would get it based on the $6,100 equivalent for a Tier 3, and it's the $3,050 for a Tier 2. It wouldn't be based on the $8,600. If that makes sense to you. We decided to go that they get the same amount based on any other student at that time. Unless you want to give them more or less.
No, I'm just trying to ensure my understanding of what you just described is the way I read it in the comm sub for the comm sub.
Right.
Because I would have thought that a Tier 2 student at a public charter school would get $8,600 plus $3,050.
Well, we could have done something like that, but we just they'll do that. That's what will happen. They'll get the $8,600 as their base.
Right.
And if they have any students that are Tier 2, they would get an extra $3,050. They have another Tier 3, then they would get an extra $6,100.
Very good. That's...
Unless we change the number for the base.
I just wanted to confirm my understanding. No.
That's the intent, what I just told
you. Gentleman from the 22nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
To you. Before I ask any questions, I want to very publicly state that I appreciate all the work that you've done. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. You've done a lot of work on this. But I do, I think the first thing I want to ask about is discretion and this sort of subsection C that we've got here for additional supplemental funding. And I recognize that's subject to appropriation.
That's the main purpose.
Yes. But it would appear that if that's entirely discretionary, I mean, I know we've got the further protections from maladministration, that effectively you're going to have county school boards lobbying whoever it is that's at the Department of Education.
That is true. The purpose for that fund, if I can elaborate on, and other states would put about $300-500 million into those funds.
Okay.
For the special needs part, the tier two and three, we were budgeting about $15.3 million.
Sure.
Now, if we had a nice surplus, let's say you have your data center come in and gets established and we start having a lot of revenue, we may say, well, we're going to start funding that up to a certain level. And we wanted to give discretion to the department to say we have certain counties that have a real need we need to fix right away. They could do that. If we decided as a legislature we want to appropriate so much to different portions for different characteristics, we could do that too. And then we could set whatever limit we want on how much goes into that fund. But the base was to do those special needs ones first. Mm-hmm. And we may raise that level. We may decide, hey, when we start seeing those things going on, we may say it's not adequate. We may have to give them more. It just gives us the latitude to adjust that part of the formula at any time.
So I guess you've seen this methodology in other states, effectively.
Similar, but most of, a lot of them seem to go by per pupil. That's why we went with the per pupil part here.
Sure. I mean sort of that additional supplement.
The additional, yeah. We just listed those four characteristics because they seem to be important ones the counties are going to want to access. If they had extraordinary transportation costs, some counties have vocational centers.
Sure.
That they would need other funding to help with. The alternative centers were what we were looking at because we had put into the discipline bill, we had put down that they would have to do an alternative center, or potentially some counties don't have them, so if they chose to do something and form one, that would do that. And then the other thing was on pilots, such as consolidation or potential keeping a school open and doing some charter or something else. That's what we're trying to do. Okay. If that explains what you're doing, among others, there are other things that may come up.
Sure. The way that you would envision this occurring, sort of once we set this up, is that if we do have additional dollars, that even in the appropriation bill, that we might sort of add, some spending language to it, which might sort of dictate here's what we've got in mind for this, and maybe
right.
even the means of distributing it. So while the fund may say. My concern here, right, is that the fund, frankly, says it's up to discretion, right? So what I would see is, what would be the nightmare, actually, would be a county board basically hiring a lobbyist, sending them up here, taking, either state school board members to dinner all the time or bureaucrat within Department of Education.
And that's where we'd have oversight to look at that. No, the reason I put the Department of Education aside what they could do is they would probably be the immediate people to look at a potential request act quicker. Overall, we would have the oversight to decide how do we want to appropriate things.
Okay. I think the final question that I would have, I studied the fiscal note there before, is the impact as it relates to local funding and those property tax dollars versus just the outright per pupil spend. So the initial fiscal note listed cost here of like $215 million. So on and so forth, right?
Yeah, at the level that I had put at the $6,500.
Yeah.
Right? That was more than... Yeah.
Sure. So, totally get it. But on this committee substitute for the committee substitute, does local property taxation play any role in the funding formula?
Not in the formula, but that is part of the local share.
Okay. Right,
they get a local share. That's right. Calculated from their tax revenue.
Right. Well, so that I guess it's where. So there are counties right now that get literally zero support from the state based upon
a
very large property tax base.
Right. But this bill, the way they have it, the first 3 years was still under the same form, the
right.
current formula. They're still not going to get anything.
Right. But in the 29.
Then they will get something per pupil.
Okay.
All right. But the intent there was to be as fair among everyone, do it on a per pupil basis for all the counties, all the districts. That way, if we had any suits against us, we could say, hey, we're trying to be equally distribute this.
As if, for instance, on
for
the
certain,
right.
Yeah, that's where we're going. Now, the thing was, counties, and this is my opinion or my bias, was the counties that would receive more money that already have a high tax value, they can do other things with their school system or infrastructure, whatever else they want to do. I've looked at it as that's their money. Let them do so for their county.
Okay.
If they want to lower their tax rate for the people, they can lower their tax rate for the people.
Understood. Lots to unpack, but I really appreciate your work. Thank
right.
you.
So there's no way I'm going to get a perfect system. It's just that was the
yeah,
best reference I could go to as far as a per pupil basis.
Sure. I'm not saying that negatively. I appreciate it very much. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? The gentleman from 38th. We have a request from the Department of Education. Would the gentleman please come forward? Since you've already been sworn in, would you state your name and your position?
Yes, sir. Uriah Cummings, School Financial Operations Officer for the West Virginia Department of Education.
Gentleman from the 38th.
Yeah, Uriah. You were listening to my responses. Did they appear to be accurate in your opinion, or?
Yes, sir. I just want to provide some clarification. There is not based on the version that we spoke about, there's not a freeze for a period of the next 3 years, rather than a methodology that is will be continued. So the current methodology will be continued for the next 3 years. There's not a freeze in the level of funding. So I just wanted to clarify that, because there was some mention of a freezing of funds, and that wouldn't be the case. To the gentleman's point, Delegate Limbaugh, that's correct, that local share under this methodology, there isn't any consideration given to local share other than the point in time reference that we're at, because we are computing this based on essentially the state aid per pupil amount as it currently is set forth. So it's, the eight-step process minus the local share gives us a total base allocation that then we're dispersing on a per pupil amount. So, again, it's a point in time essentially reference to the local share as a statewide average rather than an across the board methodology as it's currently set up as of right now. I don't remember the gentleman's question, Delegate Williams. If you would like to repeat your question, I'm happy to respond.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
I'm sorry.
I should not.
Gentleman from the 80th.
Sorry.
Trying to do two things here at once, and it didn't work.
Sorry.
I went along with it, so not your fault. So the difference in charter school money and then non-charter, is that because there's a revenue source that a public school pupil has that a charter school pupil misses out on? Or is that what I would say maybe is a policy decision that's been made that will just give them more money?
That's back to the same reference that I made there about the local share aspect. That's the difference there. County Boards of Education can levy taxes to support on the it's called a regular levy to be able to support education in that county, wherein public charter schools cannot. So that would be the difference there, is that's their way of essentially saying, here's some of the tax revenue back to a public charter school. On average right now, that difference is about $1,200 or so dollars per pupil. So if you add to the 6,100, and I'm sorry, it would be essentially, the math would be 8,600 minus the 6,100 right now on average. So it's about 1,500 is what the local share per pupil is. So that's that difference, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Gentleman from the 37th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize. I get confused on occasion, and I'm often wrong, but I don't want to go through life being wrong. You said that this $6,100 was a base number and subject to something else, and when I'm reading this bill, it says shall be a block grant in the amount of $6,100. So where does the increase come on this within this bill?
So what I'm referring to is how we operate currently. So as the formula is currently, we still look at it as a per pupil basis on the back end. We can compute what a per pupil amount ends up being. But that's 61. And currently that number is actually $5,700 approximately for fiscal year in 27.
And I recognize this. Effective for the school year, 2930, all school boards of education in this state shall be funded by a block grant in the amount of $6,100 per enrolled student. There is no, that's a period after that.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
So if you're telling me you're assuming that there is something in addition to that, I think according to these two pages, that might be mistaken. Unless you haven't gotten the last current version of this committee substitute.
and I may have misspoken as to what I may have been referring to. I'm not certain,
and that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, yes, sir. I understand that once we get to this point in time, the only way that these numbers change is if the legislature acts to be able to do so. Yes.
I wanted to be certain I didn't misunderstand.
No.
I often do.
You're fine.
Come quickly,
and I may have misspoken at the time.
Members of this committee tell you I'm not the sharpest tool.
They say the same thing about me, I'm sure, too. Don't worry about it.
So, anyway, those base amounts that are set there, and we get outside of all of this step up, step back, A's, B's, C's, and D's, and we have a set amount until, in fact, the legislature would enact another form.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gentleman from the 11th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cummings, my friend to the right, the delegate from the 37th, and I were both probably pondering the same thing, but I had a different interpretation of your statement. What I heard was that the school aid formula was going to be unchanged, and so the formula would be applied, if you will, which could have year-over-year changes for 3 years.
Yes, sir. That's what I apologize. I honestly couldn't even remember what he was talking about, what I may have said. That's correct. So the amount has been spoken to as being frozen over the next three-year period as we work our way towards this set amount. Right. And it was spoken to as if those amounts were frozen over the next 3 years. Those are not frozen in time. Those will adjust as they typically would have as we do right now. So we would calculate those under the formula that we currently have in West Virginia Code 18-9A and would do that for the next 3 years. Prior to then getting to the fiscal year mentioned there, in which these per pupil amounts would be in place.
Thank you, sir. If you take a look at history on how the funding formula per student has increased, have you extrapolated that to see where we would be for school year 2029-30?
So there are various pieces of legislation that impact that number, mainly pay raise bills over the past 10 years. Again, currently, as things stand, the per pupil amount is just shy of about $5,700. Last year was actually $5,780-ish. So it's actually come down a decent amount, about $100 per student over the year-over-year change, based on, you know, no legislation being passed this session. Okay, I want that clear. Assuming no other legislation has passed in this session, that's where we stand. So what has been computed is the 3% pay raise that's currently estimated to be a $47.7 million impact, and that per pupil amount approximately is $335 per student. So we increased from, and at the time when we were working on this legislation, we didn't have the new numbers yet. So at the time we were working from a $5,775 plus $335, which would be the $6,100. So as the gentleman said, the pay raises have been accounted for from that fact alone, because we are increasing on a state aid per pupil basis that difference to make up for the pay raise.
Okay. So to take that information and confirm understanding, if there was to be another 3% pay raise between now and the beginning of school year 2029-2030, we would ostensibly see a further increase of about $335 per student.
Approximately, yes.
Okay. And then that would mean that this rate of $6,100 would actually be a step down from where it might have been if we had maintained the school aid funding.
Yes, sir. Anytime legislation is passed from this point forward, if this bill were to pass, that would have a cost that the legislature would expect to fund. There would have to be a change to this rate.
Okay. I think that's it. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Gentleman from 22nd.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cummings, thank you for the discussion. So every year, right, typically healthcare costs go up, and we as the employer typically pick up, you know, our share, the 80%, it's 80-20. Heck, we put that in law. If set static here,
Right. I understand what the lead sponsor is trying to do and likely could even support it. I'm trying to digest everything, right? But for simplicity's sake, can you think of a way or suggest to us a way to account for what is, in fact, frankly, an every year modification, unless anybody believes that healthcare costs aren't going up next year? And the year after that, the year after that, the year after that.
So I will say that the PEIA and retirement are excluded from this. They are separate items within the state's budget. So this would only be looking at the public school support plan and the allowance under that. And the PEIA, the unfunded retirement liability, and then the normal cost liability to the state for retirement are separate line item appropriations under the state's budget. Therefore, this legislation would not impact any additional appropriations made to those lines.
Okay. Is there any other variable cost per year that would be impacted? Right, that typically has an every year adjustment.
Under the formula would be the local share adjustment, and then there are actual expenditures incurred under transportation and facility costs that adjust annually, and inflation could impact those numbers. For instance, the cost of a school bus, the cost of fuel, those sorts of things could fluctuate that amount. Those are variables that currently under the formula adjust as we go through life, right? But under this, again, unless there were some sort of increase that the legislature would make action on, then that would not occur annually.
So the crux of my question on this portion is whether or not we're setting up, if this were to pass, and then we hit that 2029 time frame, that effectively we have to take up a bill modifying this every year. So can you just, regardless of me pointing to one particular thing, do you see that if this, do you believe or can you tell me if this were to pass, we would be every year having a necessity to come in and modify, you know, that per pupil number?
Certainly wouldn't be a requirement per se, but if not, then you could be underfunding or overfunding, vice versa. I mean, it could be overfunding because, again, if we have a data center come in to Berkeley County, as the governor announced, the impact of that would be a cost reduction to the state because as property taxes increase, the value or the cost to the state for education has an inverse relationship due to the fact that that county is putting those taxes received towards funding education in the county. So under that assumption, then there could be situations where in a given year potentially we could be in either direction. I hope I'm kind of clear on how.
Well, I think so, but I think that the sponsor sort of mentioned that it is the intent that at the conclusion here, the local share effectively is no longer a calculation. I mean,
forgive me, I'll look to you to nod or something, but
it is still calculated.
And it's, but they're getting $6,100 no matter what.
They're getting that, but they're going to get
this local share in addition to that. Okay, that's their regular levy.
Right.
I'm thoroughly confused, but I appreciate you very much. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gentleman from the 77th.
Yes, they started on what I was wanting to clear up, is the 6,100 is what the state's share would be to go back to each student that's sitting in that county at that time. They still retain the local share, which is right now roughly $2,200 per student.
Yes, sir.
On an average across. It would depend upon how good a job their assessors do in their counties as to where that number falls in, but roughly it's $2,200.
Yes, sir.
Am I correct on that?
Yes, sir.
So that has not changed.
No, there's the county collects taxes as they normally would through the sheriff's office that then gets dispersed to the County Board of Education accordingly.
And if this kicks in 2029, as it sets now, the 61 stays where it's at. But the local share could increase or it could decrease over those years. That we don't know. According to what you're saying, it would depend upon development comes into that county.
Yes, sir.
And if that development comes into that county and increases that number, it does not do anything at all to the 6,100 number. It only increases the share that they have per student locally.
Yes, sir, as this bill is currently written and before me. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
General Lady from the 63rd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Orion, for being here.
Thank you.
Trying to make complicated things not as complicated.
It's okay.
So you mentioned the unfunded liability. Does that amount get calculated into the cost per people that we have now?
It is not. Okay, those are we treat those separately as a separate appropriation items, and even when we're computing a cost per state that's being funded, we have a state aid number, and then we broke the PEIA, the normal cost of retirement and the unfunded retirement amounts out separately.
Okay, so those have nothing to do with the 6,100.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions of the gentleman from the 40th?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the special special needs students, 3,050 and 6,100. And I'm wondering how we come up with that number and how we can predict, having been around that situation for several years. Special needs students, you really can't predict who's going to be needing to go to this hospital or this even out-of-state facility. So I'm concerned and curious, and maybe my question is, how did we come up with those numbers? So I understand where that money's going. I understand the fund idea. Naturally, that fund is going to grow. But one child having to have an aide every day of every week, even on the school bus, is going to get really expensive.
Yes, sir. So essentially the bill sponsor, the idea behind this language is that essentially a tier three or a level three student is going to be worth two FTE, and then a tier two student, I hope I said that correctly the first time, I was a level three student or tier three student's worth two, a tier two level two student is going to be about a half an additional student, so about one and a half FTE for those students. So that's the determination there as to how those rates were set. It's just the rate in the bill for a traditional student, and then again doubling that for a tier three student.
Thank you for that, and just me looking at the numbers, and you correct me if I'm wrong. There might be a motivation in here not to identify children from one level to the next, because then you'll be depleting the fund factor.
You would certainly have more money by having a student identified as a tier three student. There are mechanisms in place to ensure over-identification, things like that don't occur. We would hope that those are being handled appropriately at the county level.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions of our presenter? Gentleman from the 72nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ryan. Just listening to the discussion, so as property values changed, increase or decrease, there will be no change in the compensation. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Gentleman from the 22nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I want to follow up immediately on your answer to the gentleman right there. So, because there seems to be some conflicting statements. You've mentioned a local share line item. And the only way that a local share line item can the definition of a local share, right, is okay. You've got X amount of local property tax dollars, valuation, things cited in your county, so on and so forth, right? This, as I understand it, is going to be separate from that, but their amount will go up or down. Okay, so
yes, sir.
If this bill were to become the law, 2029,
yes, sir.
Right? Is local share a thing or is it not?
It is not a thing. So I'll paint a picture for you. So we go through an 8-step process that gives us a basic allowance. We then have local share. That gives us our total allowance that we are dispersing to county boards of education. Under this bill, we'll be stopping at Part C of that A plus B equals C equation. So A and B are no longer in effect. I hope that paints the picture a little bit better. But we'll be at C, and there will only be a C. And there A and B no longer exist.
Okay. So when I asked you about the cost of PEIA, which changes every year, right?
Yep.
Typically goes up,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
All right, your statement to me was that's handled in a separate line item.
Yes, sir.
And you mentioned local share, did you not?
No, sir.
Okay.
No, sir. A plus, so I'm gonna use the same analogy, if you will. A plus B equals C, that gives us step 10 per pupil. D, E, and F are below C at that point. And D is PEIA, E is normal cost of
outside
retirement.
Outside of the top.
Yes, sir. And then F is unfunded retirement liability. So we're going to keep C, D, E, and F under this methodology.
All right.
I hope that helps.
Maybe a little bit. I'm going to need a bucket picture like we do for the lottery.
Okay,
so you mentioned you're going to paint a picture. I don't want it with words. I want it with Microsoft Paint.
Yes, sir.
and I'd like that before this hits the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions of our presenter? If not, thank you very
thank
much.
You,
any other questions of counsel? Are there amendments to the bill?
Yes.
Would the gentleman from the 87th wish to explain his amendment and Lou and have it read?
Let's have Mark read it, and then I'll explain the reason.
All right, sir.
If that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 1, line 3, it's right after the sentence that says the current school funding aid formula shall be utilized for the school year 26-27, for the school year 27-28, and for the school year 28-29. It would read provided that the foundation allowance for any fiscal year may not be less than the foundation allowance in the immediate preceding fund year.
Gentleman from the 87th.
Thank you. The reason for that is the chart that was given out. There's 9 counties that lose substantial money, and I'll read them off to you. They're Clay, Fayette, Gilmer, Lincoln, McDowell, Mineral, Mingo, Pleasants, and Webster. So the effect of my amendment would be they would be held at the current levels they are. They wouldn't drop. They may never go back up. Or they may never rise again, but at least they're held at the same level at where they're at. So, you know, some of these counties are small and some of them are medium-sized counties like mine, but they don't lose any funding. But going forward, they may never get any more. I would appreciate your support on the amendment.
Would the gentleman yield to the gentleman from the 38th?
Yeah, question I have, the way we have the formula, that the school aid formula is currently intact, that amount that each county will get could change because you may have a decrease in enrollment in your county, you will lose some. Now, if you have a gain of enrollment, you'll get an increase in your money too.
Right. Now, I understand.
But if
that.
You have a decrease, that's not keeping it at the level that it is right now. It could vary each of those 3 years, depending on what your formula comes out to with your county.
If you have a suggestion to improve it?
No, I'm just saying that's why we kept it so it varied each year.
Right.
With the current formula, because your county might go down, it may go up. That way you take advantage of either way. Now, yeah. If it goes down, your amendment's going to freeze it at that level of right now. That's going to change the base amount that we're going to have to supplement to.
And that may be the case, but my county's going to lose, it looks like, $1.2 million.
But if we keep the same system right now, you're going to lose that anyway if it's going down that over those next 2 years. It's not going to change based on what you're getting now on this current formula unless you change the formula.
understand what you're saying, but I got to.
Now,
do
if you get, if you get, I know, but if
this is the politics, I got to do something to protect my school system and my county from the big ones.
Well,
loss.
I understand that, but if we're going with the formula that's current for those 3 years, we're keeping the budget stable based on that. Relatively stable. It doesn't mean it's going to freeze at the same level. It adjusts. Because, like I said, some counties may lose population, which means they're not going to get as much funding. Some counties may gain. We have four or five counties that I believe were growth counties, about 1,100 students in the last year. Those counties, particularly in the Eastern Panhandle, may increase even more, especially if you have a data center that shows up there.
Right, and I understand that fully.
Well, we need to compensate them for that based on the current formula. Now, if we have to adjust the base level in year four, according to this, that's up to us to make that amendment at that time, and we won't know that until 3 years.
Well, we do have a base level under 1,200 students, too.
Well, we put that in because it was currently 1,400, but we put 1,200, and that affected about 10 counties currently. That may affect more.
But I'm trying to protect my county and these other.
Well, we're trying to protect everyone's county, but we just can't bump every. I mean, we could go up another $1 billion in the budget if you want to protect everyone's county at a certain level.
I get that, but
my you can't do it.
I get that. I'm trying to get an amendment that makes sure my county doesn't lose money because our student population is relatively stable.
Okay. Well, then you should stay pretty stable based on the way this says.
But not according to the chart that you presented to us last Tuesday. We're getting almost about $1 million loss.
Well, maybe your county's getting more money than it should than the other counties that are getting a lot less. Is that fair for, for the rest of the state? That's where we're trying to make it a little more even for everyone.
I understand. I'm just trying to
more equitable.
I'm just trying to keep it the same as the previous years. That way, going forward, they can go up. They can't go down.
Well, if you can print money, keep doing it. I mean, I'm just giving you a suggestion.
I get it.
Gentleman from the 37th.
Thank you for my friend. I can appreciate your amendment. However, the amendment is asking for more dollars to supply less service. Typically, the dollars that you get per pupil are for those number of pupils. If you have less pupils, obviously, there are going to be less dollars for those. So really, it's not a loss. It is the same amount for serving the same number of folks. While the dollar amount coming into the county may be different, the number of students that are being served is different, and if it goes down, then in fact, there would be less dollars. If it went up, as the gentleman from the 38 alluded, it would in fact increase. So while I can't appreciate the view of just simply the net dollars, in essence, you're being paid for what you're providing. And as such, I would urge rejection of the gentleman's amendment.
Any other discussion? Any other discussion? Gentleman from the 87th, gentleman from the 72nd.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the gentleman from the 87th's position on his county. You know, one of the things that when we looked at the gentleman from the 38th's spreadsheet, what really struck me was the disparity between some counties of almost $3,000 per pupil based upon whether their counties were assessing more, their counties were assessing less. We always talk about averages here and what the average pupil receives. And you always assume there was a little bit of disparity, but I never recognized how much disparity there really was, almost to the tune of about 150% in some cases beyond the average. And I commend the gentleman from the 38th for really putting a lot of effort into this. And while I can appreciate you're really fighting for your county, I also think he makes a very valid statement to be able to say maybe they're getting more than they really should right now. And so as an effort of which we have been looking really hard for a period of months to try to begin to get the school aid formula equal so that we're providing nothing more, nothing less to students across all these counties, but we're also taking care of the Tier 1, the Tier 2, the Tier 3. It's a complicated and challenging issue. And while I appreciate the gentleman's amendment, I urge rejection.
Any other discussion? If not, gentlemen, from the 87th to close his comments on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, my county has a very good school system. Typically, we have one of the number one graduating high school in the state. I don't know how much that extra $1 million, if you want to call it that, is playing into that. But I don't want to lose that to my students and that. So my amendment is to put a floor in so it can't fall, but it can rise, and the other counties can rise. But those nine counties, that may be very important money to them, you know. So I would ask for support of my amendment and ask for the yeas and nays.
General from the 87th has concluded his closing on his amendment. Clerk will take a roll call vote on the adoption of the amendment. Is the demand sustained for a roll call vote? Yeah, it is. So the clerk will take a roll call vote, please.
Vice Chairman Ryan.
No.
Delegate Anderson. Delegate Hawk.
No.
Delegate Pittman.
Yes.
Delegate Mazzocchi. Delegate Canham. Delegate Canterbury.
Yes.
Delegate Lindvall.
Yes.
Delegate Hornbuckle.
Yes.
Delegate Williams. Delegate Tomey.
No.
Delegate Jeffries. Delegate Ellington.
No.
Delegate Rumbach.
No.
Delegate Statler.
No.
Delegate Worrell. Delegate
Height.
Delegate Powell.
Yes.
Delegate Zeteslo. Delegate Cooper.
No.
Delegate Horst. Delegate Howe.
Can I get to vote again?
Yeah, yes again.
Delegate Fehrenbacher.
No.
Delegate Gearhart.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
No. Call the absentees again, please.
Delegate Anderson. Delegate Mazzocchi. Delegate Cannon. Delegate Williams. Delegate Jeffries. Delegate Worrell. Delegate Height. Delegate Zeteslo. Delegate Horst. Delegate Hall.
Clerk will calculate there being 9 absent, 7 for yes, and 9 for no, amendment is defeated. Are there other amendments? If not, gentleman from the 72nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee substitute for the committee substitute for House Bill 5453 be reported to the floor with a recommendation to do pass.
General from the 72nd moves committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 5453 to the floor with a recommendation to do pass. Is there discussion? Discussion. Gentleman from the 77th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to start out by thanking the delegate. 38. I know how long he's worked on this and how hard he's worked on it. This has been going on since last session, trying to come up with something that would work. I also want to commend the staff that worked on that on both on the education and also on finance. And I want to thank the Department of Education. They've had many trips that they made to come over to talk to us on this particular piece of legislation. While this may not be the perfect solution, it's a step forward. And that's what we're going to have to do, is step forward. Over the next 3 years, basically the formula that's in place is the formula that's in place. It will still work the way it works. I think what it does send out to the counties. They'll know basically where it's going to be at when it kicks in. So they have some time to look at what they're going, where it's going to fall, where the adjustment will be. I like the part in this that allows the local share to stay at the counties when this kicks in. Whatever that local share is, they still continue to keep it. The 6,100 from the state that's now in place, which could change, there's still time to change that, but right now it's 6,100, that will basically give them more money than they're getting today. Because today, the 2,200 that we talked about is already taken into the calculation when the money comes back. So they reduce the amount of money the state sends back amounted to what they do on the local share. That will not be the case in the new formula going forward. In today's formula, they do not get a weighted on the tier 3, 2-to-1 for special needs, 1.5 for the tier 2. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Right now, going on in this state, we're taking down systems because we are not funding them with enough money from the state and the federal to take care of the special education that's going on. So what they're doing today in order to make the budgets meet is they're having to rob Peter to pay Paul. So they're taking out the money that's coming into them for another reason in this step formula, because they have to do the special ed if they're identified with it. The one gentleman mentioned, if what happened before, when that tiered system was in, counties gamed the system. We do have to find a way to make sure that that no longer can happen. I think there's better things in place now today than there was. But we do not want these counties gaming the system in order to get more money on the special needs. We want them to have what they have coming to them, but don't game the system and cause it to fail like they did before. So with that, sir, and I could talk here for 2 hours, and I know everybody wants to get this over with, I would highly recommend, even though this may not be the perfect solution, the gentleman's worked hard. It's a step forward. Let's take that step. I urge passage.
Gentleman from 37th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess it's been 2 years ago I had a bill submitted that froze the school, the funding to each of the school systems where it was, so that we would have an opportunity, frankly, to develop a funding system that is not quite as convoluted and is a little more simpler to understand and that seemed to work better. While this is not exactly in accordance with that bill, I think the principle and the concept is much the same. I have every confidence in my friend from Mercer County to accomplish that legitimate funding formula in the next couple of years, even though I think it's a pretty difficult thing to wrap your arms around, so that we won't have to visit this again. As such, I urge adoption and appreciate the bill. Thank you.
Gentleman from the 22nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do appreciate the work of the gentleman from Mercer tremendously. This is a short bill. This might be the shortest but most substantial bill that we've reviewed in this committee in a very, very long time. I'm happy to support it, though I think it'll need a lot more looking at it over the years or even as we get to the floor. The one key piece that I would mention, and I wasn't yet prepared to offer an amendment based upon the committee substitute for the committee substitute today, but we may wish to place some upper limits on certain types of spend. I like the fact that we're talking about block granting this, but as a for instance, I've seen some data here recently that would say that while enrollment net has dropped in the state of West Virginia, that administrator positions have went up. And so while we may not wish to say thou shalt in the formula, maybe we should consider saying thou shalt not. As a for instance, thou shalt not have, you know, a greater percentage of, you know, some proportion of administrators to actual teachers and things like that. We might have the ability to put a little bit more dollars in the classroom as we do these things. So something for consideration as this bill continues to move forward. But I'm happy to vote for it, and I applaud the work of the gentleman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Gentleman from the 38th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, I support this since we presented it this way. When we did the funding formula for the higher education, we did give those 3 years of trying to hold harmless. So we kept them at the same level. And then this year, as I mentioned, is when they came in and they had changes in the amounts. Some people got less than what they should get based on the formula. That's something they were going to have to adjust to. They all got more, actually, because of the cost of living part, I think, if I recall correctly. But the thing is, it gave them time to adjust over those 3 years, and that's what we were trying to do here. We did look at freezing that formula for 3 years at this current rate, but that wouldn't take into account those several counties that have that increase in population, and that was going to add, on our rough estimates from current, was going to add about another $9 million to this formula. And I was kind of charged with keeping this at a static level or pretty close. So we decided to go with the current formula for those 3 years, knowing that some counties might get less, but some counties might get more. But that was according to the current formula, and that's what they're already undergoing. We did set this up so that things could be modified in the future. Nothing says we have to sit at 6,100. I gave you a suggestion at 65 just to see where it goes and see how many counties were above or below. Certainly counties that don't want to give up anything are going to want to not probably support it, but then again, we're trying to be as fair and equitable as possible, and that's up to us. If we could give more, great. If we can't, then we'll have to decide that. But we can modify particularly the supplemental fund at any time. I'd like to keep the base at the similar rate. That could be adjusted periodically, maybe several years at a time. But the supplemental one was supposed to be more nimble and available for us to make adjustments depending on needs that may arise. But there's no perfect formula. This is the best we felt we could come up with at the moment, trying to be as equitable as possible. But a lot of work went into it from the committee and both committees and a lot of the personnel that were associated with the analysts and particularly Uriah's help and Aaron's help too in this, and the chair and vice chair also. But I think it's one of the best ways we can go. If we're trying to make something simple and change some things, this might be the best way to move. But we can still modify it. Nothing says we can't. But the goal was not to increase the budget to it too much at this time. That's something that we can do in the future if we would like to. So I would support this bill and hope you all will join me with that.
Gentleman from the 72nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, if it was easy, it'd already be done. We always have the privilege sitting around this table and sitting on the floor of the chamber to do hard things. And a lot of time and effort went into the gentleman from the 38th, as well as many other folks around this table and across the way. And I appreciate that. You know, I support this bill, and I will continue to support this bill, and I think that what he's done is really hard work. I do have some concern as we're adjusting the formula without changing the geography. We still have 55 counties. I have concerns that we may run afoul of the REC decision when property values change and making sure we have a thorough and efficient school system. So I think we may need to be in to continue to try to do those hard things and look at whether regionalization of administration and county board of educations are something that we need to continue to pursue. But I for sure will support the gentleman for the 38th and appreciate all the work, and I urge adoption and passage, Mr. Chairman.
Gentleman from the 87th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too appreciate all the work that's been done on this bill, but I think it needs a little bit more work. We've got nine counties that are going to lose on this, and because of that, I would urge rejection, and we work on it a little bit more.
All right, sir. Any other gentleman from the 11th?
No, sir.
All right, sir. Any other discussion? Gentleman from the 40th.
There was a new word popped up in this bill that I hadn't seen in my 14 years here. I don't even know if I can pronounce it or not. It was called maladministration, I believe. I like that word, and I like where it was put. And I think we should have been doing that 14 years ago. We wouldn't be in some of this mess we're in today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Any other discussion? Question for the committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Now before the committee is a House bill originating. Gentleman from the 72nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I seek unanimous consent to suspend House Rule 83B and that House bill originating be not have a hearing and be taken up for immediate consideration.
Gentlemen, the 72nd asks for unanimous consent that House Rule 83B requiring House Bill originating have a hearing be suspended, that it be immediately taken up for consideration. Is there objection? If not, counsel will explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an originating bill that is proposed before you. Currently, metallurgical coal is taxed at the rate of 5%, 5% of the gross value of the coal that's severed from the ground. This bill would propose a step down of that percentage over 5 years and then return it to the 5% in 5 years. So if the bill is adopted, if it is enacted, the rate of tax on metallurgical coal would be 4.5% next fiscal year, 4.0% the following fiscal year, and then 3.5% through fiscal year 2031, after which it would return to the 5% rate.
Questions of counsel. Gentleman from the 47th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. I've seen tax cuts. I've seen tax increases. I've never seen a seesaw. It goes down. It goes back up. What's the reason for that? Why does it work that way? Is there a reason for that? But it goes down, it staggers down, and then it comes back up.
Trying to realize what the market conditions are for coal, and that anticipation, and the gentleman from the 47th has been here before when. And you are in a coal-producing county,
right?
That we have seen the markets fluctuate.
Are they expected to decline?
And
over the next
at some
years?
Point, we as a policy decision here, feel that a five-year program that the markets would continue to come back. Obviously, metallurgical coal is a big factor for steelmaking, and that we ought to anticipate that that demand for steel will go up at some point, and to help the current layoff situation that we're seeing, that we just recently saw in Mercer County and we've seen in Marshall and Ohio County, we're trying to help our neighbors here until they see to get in a better place. And once we see that they've gotten in a better place, then we'll return back to the way we've been doing.
Okay. I was just trying to understand that. That was just
yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir. Any other questions? Gentleman from the 11th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I realize since this is a House originating bill, it does not have a fiscal note as of yet.
Right.
If there was someone here that might be able to talk about what the current severance tax is from Met Coal, I would be. I would like that information.
All right, sir.
Thank you, somebody,
gentleman from the Coal Association. Sorry. You raise your right hand, please. State your name.
Chris Hamilton, West Virginia Coal Association.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you shall give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes,
so
sir.
Help you God.
Yes, sir.
State your name and your position.
Chris Hamilton, President, West Virginia Coal Association.
Gentleman from the 11th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hamilton, thank you for being here. I think probably all of us in the state have heard about some of the challenges facing the coal industry, including the met coal industry. So what is, if you will, last year's severance tax on met coal, just for if you have that number readily available?
Total severance was in the neighborhood of $250 million. And I believe severance on metallurgical was roughly 60% of that.
So nominally $150 million?
I believe that's okay. Accurate, yes.
So with this table, that first year beginning July 1st would increase or reduce the severance tax by about 10%. So nominally that would mean about $15 million less severance tax paid to help the industry until, you know, prices come back up and demand strengthens. Is that kind of my thinking about it correctly, sir?
Yes, sir. That is real close. I think it's just under $15 million, close to $14 million.
And I personally, at least I can't speak for the rest of the committee, want to help, you know, the coal industry and, you know, it's all its employees. Do you feel like, you know, I obviously am not offering an increase in this rate schedule, but will that $15 million, you know, how would you characterize that?
I would characterize that as being very generous and very supportive. I asked the governor to call an immediate cessation of all severance taxes on coal, both thermal and metallurgical coal, 2 weeks ago because of the headwinds and the hardship and all the damage that's been done to this industry, both thermal and met, over the past decade or so. You know, we come back from an amazing day at the White House with our president, who's been mobilizing his resources and energy team to do everything imaginable to boost the coal industry nationally. And we come home, and on the way home, we hear of 500 miners in our predominant southern metallurgical producing counties being furloughed, potentially furloughed, receiving their WARN notices. And we find ourselves in a situation where, you know, we've always asked for some relief, whether it be policy, substantive. The legislature was so great in this committee several years ago, reducing the severance tax from 5% to 3% on our thermal coal as we were shutting coal mine after coal mine down, as all the clean air initiatives from the previous federal administrations were being imposed, and we were losing market share. And the legislature was very generous to lower that severance. We find ourselves here today hitting such tremendous headwinds against our metallurgical coals, which have always been exempt from all the tax relief and other favorable initiatives enacted by the legislature. You know, that segment of the industry has done pretty good, but we're relying on export markets predominantly for about two-thirds of the output of our metallurgical coals. We're counting on markets in Brazil, throughout Europe, South America, the whole Pacific Rim. And we're finding that the country of China, every time that they run into some economic woes, the first thing they do is begin selling extremely low-cost, cheap steel, way under cost, to help boost their economy. And that's what we're facing at the current time. That's one of the biggest ominous situations we find ourselves in. And the country of Australia is providing China with their metallurgical coals. And we're seeing a downturn in the purchase and consumption of met coal as these countries are buying steel and not making steel. And that's going on within all the market territory that we ship our metallurgical coals to. It's lost about 40% of its value over the past 12 months. And we have about 10 mines right now and about 1,000 miners that have been furloughed because of this. Based on communications with my members, over 90% of the metallurgical coal is being sold under cost today. And And it's not just on the export where we find, you know, these strong headwinds working against us with all the global trade and tariffs and everything else, but we're competing for a shrinking domestic steelmaking market as well. We're not making the steel as we once were, and we're competing with the state of Pennsylvania, which has zero severance tax. We're competing against the state of Virginia, which has a 1% severance tax. And on that sale price of $132 a ton, that's $1.32, where we're paying a $6 plus tax on a ton of met coal. So the reduction in the severance will be extremely helpful. That's very, very generous. Might not help us compete against Australia, but it will help us compete against the states of Alabama, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. State of Kentucky last year took severance completely off coal that's exported. It'll help us domestically first and foremost, but you know it'll be very, very difficult to help make up that $34 a ton freight cost to get that coal to China and Korea.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hamilton, for at least sharing that perspective. Using your original figures, you know, that 10%, then doubling that and then tripling that, this bill then would, over this five-year period, as I've calculated, is worth about $180 million in reduced severance tax. So... thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gentleman from the 25th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Hamilton, for being here. Looking forward for the rest of this year, do you know what the coal market looks like as far as consumption?
We get a little peek into that from time to time, but our marketing experts tell us, and the federal government is telling us, not to expect any change for the remainder of this year and probably 2027 with metallurgical coal markets, shipments, and costs.
Because I think I saw, and you can confirm or not confirm, but the U.S. Energy Information Agency said that they anticipate U.S. power plants will use about 7% less coal this year.
U.S. power?
U.S. power plants will use 7% less coal this year.
70% less?
Seven.
Sounds reasonable.
And I think earlier you said about 1,000 workers have been furloughed. Is that since January 2025?
That's been over the past 3 months.
Over the past 3 months?
2026.
Okay. Since January 2025, how many coal miner jobs in West Virginia have been lost?
Total job, and bear in mind the 500 that were announced on February 20th, I believe. You know, those were WARN notices issued, so no layoffs have actually taken place there. I think statistically, we show the same employment right now that we would have in January 2025. Two relatively large mines have come back online up in the north central part of the state that were experiencing some geological issues and some marketing. But those are both back online. We've had a couple of thermal operations that have increased employments, giving some of the markets that they were in and some of the coal-fired utilities extending their operational life in a couple places. But there has been also a couple relatively small metallurgical mines in the southern part of the state give WARN notices and close.
Yes, sir. I saw a report that West Virginia and Kentucky coal mine jobs lost, I believe, February 2025 was 1,600. I didn't know if you had the breakdown of how many of those jobs are West Virginia jobs.
Yeah, I think that sounds a little high, but again, there's been some trade-offs. There's been some, you know, bringing back miners that were furloughed because of, I mentioned two mines in particular, relatively large mines that had some geological issues.
Yes,
so there's been some offsetting of those numbers.
Yes, sir. I know you're talking about met coal specifically, correct?
Yes.
Do we know about how much percentage of met coal in the U.S. is exported?
Well, we're the leading export state. You know, we account for about 50%.
I saw a report, I think we're West Virginia, about 67% of our coal is exported to China.
That's a little high.
It's not as much as 67%?
60%. 67 sounds a little high.
Okay. And this is, I
guess. I'm not arguing, I just don't know. Somewhere around 60.
And so I guess some of this is a lot of things, as you said, different headwinds. But one of them is the retaliatory tariff prices, correct?
It's had an impact, yes.
It's had an impact.
Yes.
And those retaliatory tariff prices were a consequence of our tariffs, correct?
Some of that loss could have been, yes. Some of the additional costs.
So the retaliatory tariffs were in part to our U.S. tariffs that were by this current federal administration, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And do we know just how much we've lost from February of last year to this year as far as those prices?
Someone shared a figure with me at about $50 million annually the tariffs have cost coal producers here, and that's nationwide.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Gentleman from 37th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. $15 million, I assume that's the first year, maybe a little more, obviously, as the percentage de-escalates.
Yes.
Is it possible that as the tax rate comes down on that coal becomes more competitive?
Yes.
And there would be more volume that would be subject to severance, and that there may not, in fact, be a $15 million loss?
I believe so, yes.
And as that continues to go down and becomes more competitive, so it
basic economics says all things being equal, a lower price would make it more competitive and more sales subject to tax.
Yes, sir.
Is that fair?
That's fair.
When the severance tax was reduced on steam coal, was that reduced to a flat rate? Did it have an escalation or re-escalation clause in it?
No, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yes.
Any other discussion with our guest? If not, thank you. Thank you. Please sign.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Is there any other discussion? Council, are there amendments to the bill?
Yes.
Gentleman from the 37th to explain his amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, the amendment's on page 3, and it begins where it says provided further on line 23 and takes out the language that says provided further the rate imposed by this subsection on the gross value of metallurgical coal beginning July 21, 2031 shall be 5%. The effect of that amendment is simply to keep, as we are reducing taxes, we're not raising taxes. As my friend from Greenbrier said, as was testified to by the gentleman from the Coal Association, good economic theory says that lowering taxes does in fact create more economic activity, and more economic activity does in fact create more tax revenue. So as we ease this rate down, we should be bolstering the metallurgical coal industry and at the same time producing more revenue to the state tax department, and frankly that we get to see how we can spend. So this legislature always has the authority to change tax rates. So when it gets to 2031, should I live that long, and we feel like we need to tax metallurgical coal further, I think y'all probably know my opinion at that point, but we'll go into that. But if this body decides that we need to have a 5% tax rate, then we have every authority to enact that 5% tax rate. We are, in fact, with this bill, lowering taxes. And in my opinion, if we're going to lower taxes, we need to leave them low until another legislature decides to raise them back. I'm from Mercer County, not a tremendous amount of coal mining activity in Mercer County, but there is some. But I want to tell you where I am from, the coal mining industry has kept our part of the world afloat for 100 years easily. Much of the prosperity you see in other parts of the state have been enabled by the fact that coal has been mined in the southern coal fields. Berkeley County currently is very prosperous, but they've become prosperous because the coal mines have held up the balance of the state until they've had the opportunity to catch up. I think we need to do everything that we can to give the coal industry, particularly the metallurgical coal industry, because that is what we're talking about here, and it is what we get the biggest price for, and it is what we currently have a pretty good market for overseas. Give them every opportunity to be successful. To do that, we need them to have a legitimate low tax rate. And I think the plan here, an escalating lowering of the rate, is good. And I think once we get that to a legitimate low rate, we need to leave it there until another legislature says we can't do it anymore. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Any other discussion? Gentleman from the 87th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gentleman, yield.
You betcha.
To the gentleman, I support the gentleman's amendment, but in 2031, did you consider when drafting your amendment like 3 and then 2.5 and then 2?
I did not, to be perfectly frank. You know, we could bounce numbers around all day. In this particular instance, I know that this bill has been looked at in consultation with the coal industry leaders and the chairman with regard to budgetary constraints. When it gets to 2031, we're on the backside of that six-year plan that we all know hasn't been very accurate with regard to its projections over time. So I think what we're simply doing here is saying that we've got a legitimate rate that deals with the budget and, in fact, helps the coal industry, and we're going to do that a little bit at a time so it protects the budget while continuing to help the coal industry. And when we get there, we can evaluate whether, in fact, we are producing more coal and producing more tax revenue and if that rate is legitimate or if it needs to go back up. Things do have to be reevaluated, and I don't have a crystal ball, but to lower a tax and raise the tax in the same bill, as was alluded to by my friend from Greenbrier, is an odd situation. If we're going to lower it, let's lower it. And if the time comes and we think we've got to have more money and that's where we want to get it, then this legislature has every opportunity to do that.
Gentlemen, I thank you for this, but should we both return, should the voters decide to return us, maybe we'll look at what our neighbor is at 1% and one at 0%. We might have to consider that.
For my friend, y'all haven't seen a tax yet that I wasn't willing to cut.
That's why I'm struggling.
However, one must recognize what is available and possible, and I think in this particular instance, that's what the chairman has done. He's looked at what is available and what is possible, and he has escalated that as to what is reasonable within the budget. And I think when we get to a five-year period, you're absolutely right. If you and I should decide to return, I would imagine that we would plan to continue that escalation downward.
Let's work on that together.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Gentleman from the 47th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly do appreciate the fact that when you can lower the taxes, you can make the coal industry more competitive in the short term. But this is a very capital-intensive industry, and part of the long-term effect of a long-term tax reduction is it might attract capital to the long-term development of projects like this. In my district right now, as you alluded to earlier, my district is a coal-producing district. Once upon a time, it produced a lot more than it does now. The loss of the coal mining jobs in the western side of my county have been absolutely devastating. But recently, up Angene Road, there is, in fact, a metallurgical coal mine that is currently employs, I think, about 160 people. And I believe that they have plans. They're trying to attract capital to expand that. And I think that a long-term reduction in the tax rate would probably help attract capital to a project like that. It would facilitate increase in jobs in a part of my district that desperately needs them. I'm happy to support this and encourage everyone's support. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Gentleman from the 11th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, stand in support for this, and I applaud the delegate from the 37th for bringing this forward. I think, frankly, with the history and the employment base that we have in the state, that we can certainly find nominally $45-50 million to hopefully achieve price elasticity, greater volume, and we'll recover it through selling more tons of met coal. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Are there amendments to the amendment? If not, the amendment is up for adoption. All those in favor of the adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Roll call.
Did I hear roll call? Is roll call sustained? It is sustained. Clerk will take a roll call vote, please. Yes, sir.
It's on the amendment, correct?
Yeah, on the adoption of the amendment.
Yep.
Clerk will take a roll call vote, please.
Delegate Riley.
Yes.
Delegate Anderson. Delegate Hawk.
Yes.
Delegate Dittman.
Yes.
Delegate Mazzocchi. Delegate Cannon. Delegate Canterbury.
Yes.
Delegate Linville.
Yes.
Delegate Hornbuckle.
No.
Delegate Williams.
We see it. There we go. Oh, we
can Delegate Tony.
Yes.
That's not done.
Delegate Jeffries. Delegate Ellington.
Yes.
Delegate Robach.
Yes.
Delegate Statler.
Yes.
Delegate Worrell. Delegate Hyde. Delegate Howe.
Yes.
Delegate.
This is a Tesla.
It's a Tesla. I'll just pronounce his name. Delegate Cooper.
Yes.
Delegate Horst. Delegate Hall. Delegate Fehrenbacher.
Yes.
Delegate Gerhardt.
Yes.
Chairman Chris.
Yes. There being 14 yeas and one nay, the amendment is adopted. Are there other amendments to the bill?
No.
Gentleman from the 72nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that House bill originating as amended be reported to the floor with a recommendation it do pass.
Gentleman from the 72nd. Moves House bill originating as amended to the floor with a recommendation to do pass. Is there discussion? Discussion. Gentleman from the 25th.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, while I have a little bit of concern from a fiscal standpoint and what these revenues might impact, I'm 1,000% for this legislation. 1,000% for this legislation because coal country needs help. And that's just the facts of it. We're also going to share some other facts with you. And we all know since 1980, which was the peak of metallurgical coal, it's been in decline since then. We also know that for every new gas plant that is erected, it has an adverse impact on coal. These are just the facts. And because in this committee today, again, I want to reiterate, I'm 1,000% for it. I want to help. I help my buddies in the industry. But we all know, we can dance, the federal administration currently right now with their tariffs and the retaliatory tariffs have caused us a lot of issues. And they've cost a lot of West Virginia jobs. And so that's why I'm standing here today to help our coal miners first, coal producers, coal owners, and the industry to pick up what this federal administration has done. Thank you.
Gentleman from the 47th.
Mr. Chairman, I do believe this is a great bill, but I do want to, you know, sort of respond to the previous comments simply by saying that if the tariff strategy works effectively, we may end up reshoring our steel industry, and then our coal industry will be very strong going forward because they'll be positioned to take advantage of that. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Any other discussion? Gentleman from the 22nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And while I appreciate the comments of my colleagues, I want to point a few things out. Coal largely built this state. Let's just call it what it is. We appreciate agriculture. We appreciate how we got here. But the reality is that our mountainous terrain made agriculture difficult. It made a lot of other industries difficult. And what grew and sustained this state was, in fact, our people's willingness to work hard for an honest day's work and for an honest day's pay in very difficult conditions, but in order to power this nation. Now, I will point out this bill is about metallurgical coal and not about steam coal. And, of course, as was mentioned in the testimony that we received on this bill, steam coal and power plants were harmed significantly by many of the proposals put forward by presidential administrations past, specifically President Obama. Let's just call it what it is, that the requirement for multi-billion-dollar sulfur scrubbers on each and every one of the coal-fired power plants led to those plants being shuttered in many cases. It's led to the rising electricity costs that we have and the further costs for additional transmission lines to reach new places where they're building power. And frankly, that's impacted manufacturing. It's impacted jobs. It's impacted people's kitchen tables. But what does put food on the kitchen table is an honest day's work and an honest day's pay. And that's why I'm happy to support this metallurgical coal tax reduction, because, as was explained, we start at a strategic disadvantage due to some of the policies that offshored many of our manufacturing interests, most especially steel, allowed China to become effectively the largest steel producer in the world, allowed them to play geopolitical games with their steel. And, of course, in order to get our metallurgical coal to the steel producers in China and India, especially India, it advantaged Australia simply based upon where that continent sits. Well, I sure hope we bring back more steel plants. Turns out we are, though, aren't we, under this Republican leadership? Mr. Chairman, I urge passage of the bill.
Any other discussion? Gentleman from the 40th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I was a young fella, and that was a long time ago, one of my teachers in school taught me a word, diversify. And she talked about the economy of West Virginia in very simple terms. I think I was in about the fifth grade then. But her complaint was that there was only one thing to do in West Virginia. If you didn't dig coal, you didn't have a job. If it wasn't related to a coal industry, you didn't have a job. Today in West Virginia, we have jobs galore, and we still have coal. We have tariffs that are helping one industry, and as all tariffs do, someone else at some point pays for that. Right now, our coal industry is paying for it, and we cannot let this coal industry slip any further. Well, I think we're going to dig about 87 million tons this year. 10 years ago, we dug 87 million tons of coal. We dug a lot of coal before that because Australia had a problem with high water, of all things, and they couldn't ship directly to China. The reason China can get Australian coal, for those of you who don't know it, is it's not very far from Australia to China, so it doesn't cost as much to haul it. But at some point, West Virginia coal will continue as it is now, and at some point, as this economy of this state, thanks to the actions of this legislature for the last 12 years, has diversified, coal will remain not king, not ever again king, but coal will remain a partner in the economy of this state. And that's what we've got to have, is a lot of partners. We can't have just one industry. And we've got more than that now, thanks to a lot of folks' leadership in this room, in this building, in this state, and in this country. And I do support this bill, sir.
Thank you very much. Any other discussion? If not, question for the committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Gentleman from the 72nd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move we adjourn.
We need sponsors on the bill because
it's yeah, we yes. do need sponsors. It looks like
all the above.
All the above on who's here. All right. Question for the committee is the motion by the gentleman from the 72nd that we adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Thank you very much. We're good. No, you didn't. That worked out fine.